Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I hit the ball first time, and there it was in the back of the net.
Motivation, yes. Motivation, motivation, the 3 M's.
That's perverse. In a football field, with kids watching.
Ladies and gentlemen, England will be playing 4-4-2.
Take a penalty. 8-1. 8-1. I just said to colleague, referee's got me the sack. Thank you ever so much for that, won't you?
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Touchline. I'm going to put it out there straight from the start. This is a little bit of a filler episode. Dennis is just having a period of absence at the moment. Don't worry, he's not leaving. We're not going anywhere. We enjoy this far too much to do that. But me and my good friend Seb Patrick, say hello, Seb.
Hello.
Are going to be just doing, as I said, a little filler episode because we've got a couple of things coming up that have just needed a little bit more time, a little bit more research. But we think you're going to really enjoy them. Seb, how are you?
I'm very well. Sorry, you just caught me having a swig of beer there. I thought you were going to go on longer than you did.
Excellent professional start to podcast, as usual, from us. We're just going to have a little chat in Dennis's absence about kit, Seb, because why wouldn't we?
We just want to make him seethe when he listens back to this.
Yeah, this is purely...
he didn't get to have this conversation.
Purely to wind him up. But we're not going to follow the traditional BTT format for this one. As I said, it's a little bit more freestyle and should be a little bit shorter. But we're just going to have a little chat about, Seb, what is the best kit in the Premier League this season?
Well, it is the Arsenal one, isn't it?
No. It's explain think, reasons. Go into your workings.
I do think with the away kit, they have chickened out and they should have gone more fully bruised banana. But I do like that one. But I think the home kit is magnificent. I think generally in the last few years, the best kit designs have been Adidas. I've wanted Liverpool to go back to Adidas for a while, and that Arsenal kit makes me really want to go back to Adidas because I can just picture that kit but just with red sleeves and no blue, and even with the fact that the stripes just are on the shoulder and not down the rest of the sleeve has got that very late 80s look to it. And the collar is grey. It's just smart and it's sharp. It's a very good looking kit. I mean, I'm a big fan of our Liverpool's home kit. Not so keen on the away in third, but I think this season's home kit's maybe the best one that New Balance have done. And I also really like Burnley's. I don't know if it's their away or third, but the one that Burnley wore against Arsenal this weekend just gone. We're recording this on the 19th of August, so that weekend just gone. But that green away kit of Burnley's, I think, is a stunner as well.
I actually think Dennis will genuinely be fuming not being able to interject into this conversation, which is the best part of it. But I genuinely think it's actually a pretty vintage year, Premier League year, kit-wise. Because there are...
It's a strong one, yeah.
When you look across all the major sides, Chelsea excluded, they've all got pretty decent kits, either home or away. So the City kit, the home kit is fairly bland, but the away kit, the black with the Hacienda reference, I think is
yeah. I think their home kit is... I wouldn't go so far as to say not bad. I would say it's dreadful. I think their home kit is absolutely dreadful. And actually, this probably doesn't matter because it's not like Etihad need the advertising, but you can't read the sponsor logo on TV on the shirt.
But the Man United kits aren't bad. The Arsenal kit, like you say, is a bit of a stunner, really. And sort of sprinkled throughout the league, as I said, there's at least one kit from every team that I think is a very good looking kit. The other thing I wanted to mention is I have a little fetish, Seb, about I love certain colours, playing against certain colours. And I am so pleased that we've got a couple of claret and blue versus yellow Norwich kit coming up this season, because that is one of my all-time favourite colours on pitch in front of me.
I'm not super keen on Norwich's kit. I don't like the fade in the bottom half of the shirt. It literally, if you just took that bottom green portion off the shirt, it'd be much better. I do like their away kit for obvious reasons. Yes. Anyone who hasn't seen it, it's red with yellow trim. Wonder why we like that one. But
the one I want to talk about, inevitably... But in my defence, I have been in love with this kit since the minute I saw it, as our WhatsApp group will attest, is Brighton have got a fully blacked out away kit. They've even blacked out the badge, the sponsor logo, everything on it. And I think it looks the business, to be honest with you. The one thing that lets it down, I'm willing to admit, it is over a Nike template. But the black and the very, very dark grey, and as I said, blacking out the badge, etc., I think it looks pretty mean. And I'm not a big one for buying kits, Seb. Are you?
No, I mean, partly because of the cost. And the last Liverpool one that I bought was the 125th anniversary one, which was the from two seasons ago, the first one to switch to that darker red.
Yeah.
And it had the big 96 style V-neck collar as well. So I really liked that one.
Yeah.
I had a feeling that one was going to sell out quickly. So I actually did a rare thing and pre-ordered it at full price rather than waiting for it to get knocked down in like March or something.
I'm more into retro kits. So I would always end up, if I was going to buy a kit, I would invariably end up looking at something new and then buying something from about 1987. But this black kit is sorely tempting me into buying it and setting it loose at five aside. It really is.
I like Brighton's home kit, actually, because I think Brighton have struggled for a few years to sort of be a bit distinctive with blue and white stripes.
It's
and this whole thing of having two shades of blue, so it's usually being the darker blue stripes and the lighter ones, and it really didn't work on, was it last season's or the season before, where there was quite a big contrast?
It was the last season's was the one on the night template where it had the light blue sleeves, and it's the problem is with blue and white stripes is they are so generic, it's nigh on impossible to get something like really iconic. So if you look back at Brighton fans' favourite kits, they're nearly always like the British Caledonian Phoenix Brewery era, which were essentially blue shirts. You know, there were no... There was pinstriping on them, but they weren't blue and white stripes. And, you know, one of my various day jobs, obviously I cover Huddersfield Town, they have exactly the same problem. Getting a good striped kit is tough, is really tough.
But I like that kind of that shadow darker V pattern on the Brighton one this season. So I think
I'm sorely tempted. My daughter has announced herself as a Brighton fan, a Huddersfield Town fan, and an England fan, which one of them in there annoys me slightly. But she has decided she wants a Huddersfield Town kit, but she also wants a Brighton kit. So we will journey down there and I will buy her a Brighton kit from the club shop. But I don't think I will get out of there without buying myself that black kit. And I won't go full kit, don't get me wrong, but it's looking like the first shirt, first football shirt I've bought for quite a while. Anyway, we're going to get into our main topic, and we're revisiting something that is... I would say beloved Seb, but with a few caveats. It's not as beloved as some things, but we're going to look at the world of Billy the Fish.
Great match winning goal, Rex, but how did you manage it?
This is no ordinary ball. It has a highly advanced jet engine controlled from inside.
But how did you find the pilot small enough to fit inside the ball? There's only one answer, Billy the Fish.
Yes, I'm alive and well. My fish-like body made me the obvious choice to fly Rex's jet-powered aircraft ball.
Hold it right there. I am the real Maxwell Baxter, chairman of the league committee, and I accuse you all of cheating, and hereby expel Fulchester United from the cup competition and the Football League.
My expel?
This
my
isn't expel. The real Maxwell Baxter. It's just another cardboard replica with a hidden tape recorder.
What you heard there was a little bit from the cartoon series, which many people will have stayed up late to watch on Channel 4 or caught on repeats, as we had to back then because there was no Channel 4 player online. That is the worst, by the way, of any channel's online service. I don't know how they get away with it being so buggy and so rubbish, but anyway, personal rant over. But Billy the Fish first appeared in Viz, and Viz has got a... It couldn't have a more British history, really, Seb, could it? It comes from... I mean, it was found in 1979. It sort of came up through the... Like it was like a comic book fanzine, wasn't it? Almost, with sort of a foot in the punk era, and it was always political. It was always very very funny. It was always very adult, and it always parodied the sort of culture around it of the Beano, the dandy.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the key thing, isn't it? That it's. It's kind of like it's like an underground comic, except it's an underground comic by people who were raised on the British comic tradition.
So it parodies everything from Roy the Rovers to like war comics, and you know like Dan Dare, and as I said, the Beano and Dandy are sort of direct inspirations. But then also it's got sort of a foot in almost a Private Eye type camp with. A heavy, heavy surreal edge to it. If you're listening to this and you've never treated yourself to one of the Profanosaurus collections, I urge you to buy one immediately because they are just the most gloriously, crudely funny thing in existence. But my relationship with Viz was that through... It went slightly mainstream, I'd say, sort of early to mid-90s, and it rode on the back of Loaded and FHM and everything else as this sort of, like, adult comic. And I have read Viz on and off for, you know, sort of coming on 20, 25 years now. It's still something that I've never subscribed, but always if I'm going... Say, if I have to go down to London for work and I need something to read on the train, I'll always pop and get a copy of Viz. And
I'm not sure I'd read it on the train because I would feel like other people were judging me because I think it's reputation and I think it's covers, which the covers are often deliberately provocative. I find its reputation and its actual what it actually is really interesting because I think, and in ways that we'll come to just when we talk about Billy the Fish, it is something that is unashamedly never ever politically correct. And I generally do not like things that proudly proclaim themselves to not be politically correct, because what that usually means is that they feel that they can happily have a pop at, you know, any group of people and do so often in a quite insulting way. And what is, and usually the kind of people who get to say that they're not being politically correct are white, often middle-class men, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, Viz comes from a white, working-class male background. It is unashamedly not politically correct, but I think it's always had a quite interesting clash between... It has characters in it, you know, it's got your Sid the Sexist, your Roger Melly, your Fat Slags kind of thing, which, I mean, I don't think it's actually ever punching down at people, and I think that's the thing. So I think it's... I think it it gets away with sort of with stuff that is, you know, just ridiculously profane and also, as I say, you know, just mocking kind of everybody. But I do think that it's it also does tend to politically come from a point of view, if not like kind of outwardly overtly left wing, then certainly a kind of rooting for the underdog sort of thing.
It's definitely
very suspicious of authority.
It's definitely left leaning. There's no you can't deny that, and it's left leaning because, you know, Chris and Simon Donald, wasn't it, his brother, who sort of put it together with their friend, obviously born and raised in Newcastle, and coming Newcastle, the northeast in you know the 70s and 80s was an incredibly politically charged area. So without going into all of that, you know, because we are here to talk about Billy the Fish, it's no surprise really. But I think the thing about Viz is that you're right, it sort of does proudly proclaim that it's not politically correct and what have you, there is always enough humour in it to that you understand that no matter how bad the view potentially being expressed is, they're always taking the mickey out of that. There's always a sort of, like I say, it's usually quite a sort of surreal edge to it. Give us a bit of a primer on Billy himself then, Seb.
So Billy was created in 1983, originally by Chris Donald and Simon Thorpe, writer and artist, and just, yeah, kind of started as really a series in the kind of early to mid 80s of one-offs that were very specifically taking the mickey out of Roy the Rovers, essentially.
Yes.
Because, you know, we're at that point in those kind of early 80s where Roy the Rovers is at its kind of peak of cultural, at its cultural peak, really, in terms of you'd had the kind of the early 80s boom with the kind of the Who Shot Roy storyline. Then we were going into the mid 80s with the Spandau Ballet stuff, which we'll get a referencing very specifically in Billy the Fish later on. So it kind of starts off just as a parody of football comics and the storytelling tropes of football comics and the ridiculousness of football comics and the cliffhangers and that sort of thing. And, you know, with its key hook being that it's about a character called Billy the Fish, who is a floating fish, who is a goalkeeper. And this is, like, never really remarked upon. He's referred to as a fish, but the fact that he's a fish who can fly and is a brilliant goalkeeper isn't remarked upon. The only times it's ever remarked upon are when they occasionally make a joke about the fact that he's a fish but can't swim, or a fish, like, so there's a particular gag, which again we might come to specifically, where he's locked in Wembley Stadium and it gets flooded and he's like, oh no, I'll be drowned, and obviously the joke is he's a fish, so he wouldn't be. But other than that, you know, it doesn't really use Billy for anything else other than to be the hook that the strip hangs off. And the strip, as I say, kind of starts off just being that kind of very specific parody of the tropes of Roy the Rover storytelling. As it goes on, they continue to do some quite specific reference jokes to Roy the Rovers, things that Roy the Rovers was famously doing. But then they start to gradually shift into using it to make jokes about football. And now we're kind of going to talk, I think, quite specifically about a specific era of Billy the Fish, because in 1990, it had the cartoon made of it. And at that point, a book was published that contained, I think, every strip up to that point, the Billy the Fish Football Yearbook. So it's everything from 1983 to 1990. It has carried on since then. But I think it's become more sporadic as time's gone on. Like, I've been buying Viz reasonably regularly for about 4 years or so now, and I think I've only ever seen it pop up like once or twice in that time.
It comes up when there's something relevant for it to comment.
Well, exactly. That's what it's kind of shifted into. I think after that peak, when it stopped, because it did have, I mean, in so much as you can say it had an ongoing story. And I think eventually they just kind of gave up on that ongoing story and just started to occasionally do it. And that was when it became just about, okay, something's happened with David Beckham, so we'll do a strip referencing that, or we'll do a strip that will have some kind of gag about someone like Sven-Göran Eriksson, or
and that Billy kind of will thing. Have the hair, we'll have a new hairstyle for each strip, you know.
But during, you know, in the period of the yearbook, and the yearbook itself does itself end on a cliffhanger, and I don't actually know how that cliffhanger was resolved, because I haven't read the strip that immediately follows it, but there is a story that's told kind of by the TV series, which very closely adapted the stories from the comic, but the yearbook itself, it's like, you can read it from start to finish, and it is one sequential story.
I mean, at one point, Billy is essentially missing. We should discuss
there's
the fact that there is there are only two Billy the Fishes.
Yeah,
because you've got Billy who sacrifices himself at one point. And then his son, who just happens to look exactly like him and also be a brilliant goalkeeper, takes over, and the strip continues.
Similarly, and I'll want to talk about him a bit more, we'll kind of come to him specifically, but I really think that actually, rather than Billy, the lead character of the strip is actually Tommy Brown, the Fulchester United manager. Again, by this point, he's not the original Tommy Brown, he gets replaced partway through.
It's I think we may as well sort of get we may as well get into it. You've got in the team, you've got a mix of the surreal, those that were parodying what was happening in football comics. So, for example, we get a couple of singers pop up, don't we? Shakin' Stevens.
So, they sign Shakin' Stevens, which, is clearly a very specific reference to the Spandau Ballet signing. And in fact, because I'm going to flick through the book here, just because they generally do have dates on the strips. Because again, some of them kind of follow on quite closely from one another. And then every so often you might get like 6 months or so between them. So they start in 1983, but they do jump on quite quickly. And I would suspect, and I'm just going to have a look, when is it that they sign Shakin' Stevens? There we go. So they sign Shakin' Stevens in January 1986. So that was just after 1985, which was when Spandau Ballet had signed for Melchester Rovers. That's actually, he joins in the same strip where Sid Preston gets shot, which I wonder if that's a specific Roy the Rovers reference as well.
Well, I think there are loads of specific Roy the Rovers references. I think they've mined a sort of history of Roy the Rovers, but then also some of the. I mean, we will do, I suspect, more than one episode on Roy the Rovers between us. And the thing is, there are Roy the Rovers tropes, basically, and Billy the Fish plays into them. Some of the cliffhangers you were talking about from episode to episode are literally set up as this huge thing, and complete, you know, the joke is that they are completely written off in the first panel of
the classic one. And I think it's the first kind of major example they do is when at the end of one of the early strips, all of a sudden a character turns up and goes, "Stop the game. I'm ruthless millionaire Maxwell Baxter. I've just bought Fulchester Stadium and intend to build a supermarket. Demolition will begin at once." And then the next strip begins with them peering behind him and going, "Wait a moment, this isn't a real millionaire. It's a cardboard replica with a hidden tape recorder."
Yeah.
Then that same strip ends with the same character turning up at the end, going, "Hold it right there. I am the real Maxwell Baxter, chairman of the league committee. I accuse you of cheating. I hereby expel Fulchester United from the Football League."
Yeah.
The next strip opens with them peering behind him and going, "This isn't the real Maxwell Baxter. It's just another cardboard replica with a hidden tape recorder."
And I mean, when I say it's surreal, there's one strip where the game is interrupted because they get attacked by Mothra from the Godzilla movies. And, you know, again, that turns literally the first panel of the next strip, it's all right because it was just a harmless cardboard cutout. And that is, again, it's part of the Roy the Rovers, we've only got 3 pages, at most 5 pages, so we can set something massive up, but often we have to pay it off extremely quickly because we need to move on to the very next thing. So there's quite a bit going on in early Billy the Fish, and there's not only the Roy the Rover stuff. There are one or two parodies of people within football at the time. You know, Maxwell Baxter is Robert Maxwell. Mm. You know, there's just, he just is Robert Maxwell, isn't he? And
yeah,
you know, there are various, the team manager Tommy Brown is he's a slight John Motson parody, but he's also every 1970s and 1980s football manager cliche,
yeah,
rolled up into one. And I'm included, and also, but also with a touch of like some comic characters like Tommy Dexter, and but it has no problem with. Again, just completely undercutting that with one joke if it needs to. It was, it as the series goes on, I think I'm just going to come out and say this for, I may as well, Seb, because I've gone back and revisited this for this podcast, and I've not had anywhere near as good a time as I hoped to have with it. I have really, really fond memories of Billy the Fish. And as somebody, like I said, who still reads Viz semi-regularly now, if he ever does pop up, it's an absolute delight. But going back to this era, there are a lot of things that just don't land for me. Mm. And there are a lot of... There are one or two slightly dubious stereotypes, but I think having... Having read through it twice, I think they are knowing stereotypes. They're not just sort of outright. There's nothing that's sort of horribly racist or tropey or anything like that, but there are one or two slightly uncomfortable moments. There are a few uncomfortable gags. But the thing that shocked me was it's just not as funny as I remember it. But there are moments. There are these moments, like you said.
There are great gags dotted throughout. I mean, you talked before about the celebrity signings and the other pop star who signs for them.
That is a marvellous that little subplot and section is brilliant when he whacks his first goal in.
It's just for the sake of one joke. They sign Mick Hucknall, and Mick Hucknall scores an absolutely amazing volley like his first touch, and then for the rest of the game just keeps missing sitters. And then one of the crowd comments, in a sadly ironic echo of his musical career, Mick Hucknall, out of Simply Red's promising early success, has been followed up with a series of lacklustre disappointments.
And that is brilliant. That is, it's genuinely, that is a little piece of genius. But
and actually, just that thing as well of the commenting is, I think that's the biggest, other than the cliffhangers, that's the biggest trope that it takes from Roy the Rovers. And one of the ones that actually, I think it keeps doing successfully and is always quite funny, which is the thing of the crowd commentating in quite lengthy fashion. In a you know, like the ball is hurtling towards the net, and you've got a load of dialogue going back and forth between people in the crowd commenting on it, and it's like it's the joke that everyone makes about Roy the Rovers, that Roy the Rovers used to do that, but I do think that Billy the Fish is generally quite funny when it does it. Like I think the style of the dialogue is usually quite funny when it does that, so I enjoy it.
Yeah, but I think to just touch on some of the stuff that is slightly uncomfortable, you know, for instance, the Siamese twins.
Yeah. There's one good joke that they get out of that, which is when they score with a header, the referee says, "I'm sorry, that doesn't count as a goal. It counts as two goals."
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's worth the rest of the stereotype down to their names being Wing and Wang. And them being, I know they've been deliberately drawn to look like terrible, stereotypical, oriental, in inverted commas, characters. I'm not sure the comic is making... If it is doing it as a satire, I don't think it makes it clear enough. Like, you can't just do something and say, yeah, but it's okay, we're doing it ironically. I think you have to do something that shows that you're doing it ironically. And I'm not sure that Billy the Fish succeeds in that.
I mean, they have so little dialogue, but one of their dialogue lines is to say, "Blown Fox, you have the ball."
Yeah.
Which,
and Brown Fox is a bit of a problem throughout it, isn't
But you see, I think Brown Fox, just like Brown Fox, basically, for those who have no idea what we're talking about, is basically a huge-breasted Native American woman who plays as winger slash attacking midfielder. There is very little explanation for that fact, by the way. But that is far more played as, yes, we know all these things are stereotypes, whereas the Wing and Wang stuff just feels, it all feels a bit slightly Yellow Peril, and it feels a bit uncomfortable. But it's... there are these moments, these individual jokes that I think are brilliant, Seb, don't get me wrong, but there are one or two places where it just feels a bit flat, and it doesn't quite work for me. But I love the completely surrealist nature of it. I still love the fact that you've got like a mad scientist playing with it, again, very little explanation, but every time he gets the ball, he's able to get his calculator out and work out the exact angle he needs to shoot. And I love those little moments where it feels inherently British, doesn't it? You know, there's nowhere else in the world where you could get a Billy the Fish like this. But there are, as I said, there are a few uncomfortable moments. But, yeah, going back to it, Seb, what was your sort of genuine experience? Was it, you know, was it pulling on an old comfy cardigan, or was it, you know?
It's tricky because I've had this copy that I've got now, which I don't think is the original one that I had. I think I probably nabbed this off eBay, but I did get it a while ago, which means that I've reread it a few times as an adult, so I haven't just gone back to it for the podcast. I first read this like when it came out as a kid. Like, my dad bought it. I don't know if we saw the cartoon first or read the book first and then the cartoon, but it was in November 1990, so it would have been only just as I was getting into Roy the Rovers anyway, but also I would have been only just turning 8, so I was far too young to read this. I don't know if my mum knew that I was being allowed to read this by my dad, but I don't think she would have let me. The thing is, I don't know if it was before or after this, but there was a Pathetic Sharks special that Viz put out. In fact, I've got a copy of it here. So when did that come out? That was 1991, actually. That was the following year. And that was them doing something that, while it does have jokes that kind of maybe go slightly on the, if not risque, so, you know, kind of slightly more targeted, that was them doing something specifically aimed at kids. It was Lou Stringer's Pathetic Shark strips. And I remember loving that as a kid, but I think I had already read Billy the Fish and enjoyed some of it, but probably a lot of it went over my head as well. So I've gone back to it since, and I think, yeah, it has that comfort because there are certain lines and jokes that I always, I very specifically remember and that I have that kind of nostalgic affection for. But yeah, it's hard to deny that going back to it now, and when you read it, or particularly when you read it all in one go, it can get a little tiresome.
Yeah.
There's no denying it. It is a little bit. It's not that it only has one joke. It does have multiple jokes, but sometimes it falls back on the same jokes a bit too often.
Yeah.
And I think there are the odd kind of individual, like, full episode where just whatever they're doing with like the central idea of it just isn't strong enough. So for the whole page, because usually these things are done in like one page, sometimes two, it's like, if it doesn't feel like it's landing within about the first, you know, 4 or 5 panels, it doesn't really land for the rest of the page, the rest of the episode, you know.
One thing that I think is a bit of genius that I'd completely forgotten about is the Spot the Difference strip.
Yes.
Which is just great. And all it is it's a half page, 8 panel strip that they've just printed one on the lower, and it's just it's
which they do because in the book. They've reached a point where they've got full page strips,
yeah.
And then the next one that they print is a half page, and the next one after that is a full page. So they need something to fill the bottom half of the page, so yeah. They reprint it and do it as a spot the difference.
But it's just very, very funny because Billy the Fish becomes Pilly the Fish. Physio's got his knob out. Bobby Robson suddenly developed. Well, sorry. Robbie Bobson suddenly develops Bugs Bunny teeth, and Tommy Brown becomes Adolf Hitler.
It's
in the
last panel where he becomes Adolf Hitler, yeah. Instead of saying "but we won," the dialogue's been rewritten for him to say "but we won."
So there are these moments in it, but the other thing is that there's a change of artists, Seb, and the artistic styles are the character work is very, very similar. But the actual panel work, and this is getting a bit comics nerdy, I know, for some, is very, very different because one is sort of quite highly detailed and the other is left quite plain. And that's slightly jarring as well when you're reading it all through. But you have to remember the medium it was in when it was first being delivered, which was, you know, in a magazine as a one-off strip as part of that anthology, you know. So yeah, my first experience of Billy the Fish was actually the cartoon, because I think I would have been at an age when was the cartoon first shown?
So it was 1990 as well.
Yeah, 1990. Yeah. So yeah, it'll definitely be the cartoon, because in 1990, I won't tell you how old I was, but I certainly wasn't old enough to be going and buying Viz off the you know, because at one point you've got to understand Viz was on the top shelf with all the Bongo mags, you know. It was considered that adult, so there was no chance I'd have been reading it at that point. And I remember watching Billy the Fish and being at the time fascinated by it, Seb, rather than like really enjoying it, but the surreal nature of it, because my only tenuous link to liking it was football. You know, oh, this is a football thing, so I'm going to like this and I'm going to record this. And it's not really a football thing at all, is it? That's the sort of secret of it.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
But going back and watching the cartoon for this pod, Seb, that was hard work.
Yeah. So to summarise the cartoon, and you can, it's all on YouTube, so you can go and watch it because it's not very long. It's only it's four episodes, and I think in total it's only about 45 minutes
and
long.
And somebody's put them in a playlist, so they literally play one after the other if you really are that lazy.
I have a feeling, I don't know the full history behind it, but it seems that actually it was done as shorts that were then put together. So the shorts kind of did the cliffhanger thing, but then the episodes just had the cliffhangers run directly. And it's one of the biggest failings of the cartoon is it doesn't play the cliffhanger thing right. Like every time there's a cliffhanger, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't seem dramatic enough. It doesn't sell it as a cliffhanger, and it doesn't leave a pause. It just rolls straight on with the resolution. And so it doesn't have that sense of timing that it has in the comic, where you've actually got the end of a page, you've got a new title, you've got a recap, and then you've got the resolution. Because that's the whole point of the joke is, it's something that's treated like it should come at this big break point, but it really is really straightforward. So that's one of the kind of biggest failings. But what I'm interested to learn, and I'm not entirely certain is the case, is if there was a version of it before it was voiced by Harry Enfield, so the interesting thing about the cartoon is that literally the entirety of it, every single character is voiced by Harry Enfield. Now, actually, that's one of the better things about it, I think, because Harry Enfield is good at doing voices. Now, you know, he's... the funny thing about Harry Enfield is he's quite good at doing voices, but he doesn't always do them brilliantly. Like, you know, I've always, as a Scouser, I've never liked the Scousers, partly because I think Harry Enfield's Scouse accent is appalling. But what I think he can do is funny, slightly off accents, and he can do lots of them. And so in Billy the Fish, he's doing, you know, he does a kind of quite generic northern accent for Tommy Brown. He does a bad Scottish accent for Sid the trainer. Every Fulchester player who isn't otherwise a named character has Harry Enfield's bad Scouse accent. He does a kind of quite... He does a weirdly sort of posh voice for Gus Parker, the rival manager, which I'm not sure really works. And the limitations are somewhat laid bare when Brown Fox comes into it and he has to do a voice for Brown Fox and doesn't attempt to sound remotely female. But in general, actually, I just think, you know, if you're going to have one person sitting in a recording booth having to voice every single character in a thing, and the year is 1990, then Harry Enfield is a pretty good choice for it. And I think he does a reasonable amount to sell the cartoon.
Yeah, and in 1990, I mean, he's still, you know, Harry Enfield is sort of in the dotage of his career at this point, and he's still a unbelievably talented person. But in 1990, he was, I mean, he was massive, Seb. You know, absolutely massive. So it was a little bit of a coup getting him to do this. But I'm going to go on record now and say I completely hated his narration. It's the problem I had with it was all the generic northern voices end up blending into one. And it just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work for me. If you did this again, there is no way you would go down that route. You would maybe have Harry Enfield as narrator and playing Billy with a generic northern voice, but everybody else would be different because it made it such a hard watch. But I wonder, Seb, if they were, when they were sort of transferring to that medium, if there was also a parody there going on of a lot of children's animated cartoons from the 70s and 80s, where you did have a narrator who would do all the voices of the cartoon.
Yeah.
The thing was, if it was a parody, what it forgot is those animations that often the narration was the single biggest part of it, and the voices may only be sort of 25% of it overall. Here you've got so many, it just doesn't work for me, because the problem I have now at this point going back and watching it is, A, the animation isn't strong enough to make me just sit back and just watch it and say this is beautiful. B, the writing isn't strong enough for me to just sit back and watch it and say, well, this is just brilliantly paced and brilliantly written and very, very funny. And see, the voices in it aren't good enough for me to sort of root for anyone or get behind anyone. So I really, really struggled going back and watching the cartoon. I really didn't like it. And I would genuinely recommend anyone who's listening to this, who's got like really, really fond memories of Billy the Fish and watching the cartoon and everything, genuinely, genuinely don't go back and watch it, because it will... it will spoil your enjoyment of it. And the other thing is, it's had its legs completely cut off, because is it a PG? I mean, it's like all the sharp edge from it has gone. And that really, really undercuts it. There's not the sort of surrealism on its own is not enough to get it through. The gags aren't strong enough to get it through. But I think
the problem that it's got is that it's, because it's a reasonably faithful adaptation of that particular run of the comic. Like, you know, there's a few things that get changed. There's a bizarre moment when it adds a new cliffhanger of its own, which is the plane turning into a spaceship. That then doesn't get... It's the worst resolution as well, because the resolution is simply the spaceship drops them off at the match. And there's no kind of... It's not a good cliffhanger resolution gag the way the others are. But other than that, you know, it follows the sequence. It changes a few things, moves a few things around, but it does follow that sequence up to a point, which is the point of them winning the league title, when they think they've scored, but the referee's blown his whistle, but then it turns out the referee was just testing his whistle, and so the goal stands. But I think... while it does that, what it's doing is it's adapting something that is in a very specific format, which is it's these single or two-page comic strips. And those have a very specific format, and it's why the cliffhanger jokes work, and it's why the crowd commentating works, because, again, you know, it's single panels where all of a sudden you've got a load of dialogue when that can't possibly be taking place while the ball is flying towards the net. The cartoon doesn't replace those with tropes that are specific to cartoons. It just straight up adapts them, and it does so with, like really bad animation. Like, I think some of the art in the animation is okay. Like, I actually think like the background painted art looks pretty nice and looks pretty good. But the animation itself and most things that are going on in the foreground are really poor, and it's difficult to watch at times, because it's quite actively ugly at times, even though it is quite heavily aping the style of the comic. Something about it just doesn't come off in the same way.
I think its
biggest problem is that it doesn't set out to go, let's do Billy the Fish but do it as a cartoon. It's just well, it is, but you know what I mean? It's not. Let's not do it as a cartoon with a capital C. It's just going, let's animate the comic strip.
But let's animate the comic strip, but take some of the heart out of it. And what's left, it's not great. The thing is that, like, bad animation can work really, really well if you almost like lean into it. So do you remember the Modern Toss cartoons that were, I adore Modern Toss, and the Modern Toss cartoons, when they animated them, it's really cheap, simple animation, but they lean into that, and it's absolutely brilliant. Whereas this just feels like really cheap animation that never stops feeling like cheap animation and never does anything more than cheap animation. And you're right, some of the backgrounds are all right. I mean, I don't know if... did you watch them all? Because everything gets reused. There's often, you can see the same panels in the background. But it's a really difficult watch. And I'm genuinely serious. I think if you have really fond memories and really, really... like Billy the Fish, don't go back and watch it. Genuinely, don't go back. It slightly pains me to say that, but it's I don't know. It feels, it's not even, Seb, I wouldn't even say it's because it feels of the time, because it doesn't really feel of the time.
No.
There's nothing in the cartoon or the comic strip that you would say, oh, right, well, this specifically plants it in 1988 or 1993. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's one that I'm glad I've revisited, but I probably won't revisit any further, Seb, because I think I don't want to damage my I don't want to damage my memories of it anymore.
I think the book is a nice thing to occasionally go back to, particularly if it's been long enough that you've forgotten a lot of the best jokes.
As I had,
And there's, you know, there's still things like I absolutely love when Go Discs become the sponsor and you get all of the product placement of Go Discs records. So you've got, what's quite interesting is, I mean, one of them is I'll Sail This Ship Alone by the Beautiful South, which is a fantastic record, and there's a whole sequence of panels where Tommy and Sid are just listening to it in his office, and it's like, say, boss, this is a nice record, isn't it? Yes, it's fantastic. I'm not a big fan of pop music myself, but this is different. I really like it. It's called I'll Sail This Ship Alone, and it's the brand new pop hit from the Beautiful South, out now on Go Disc Records. And so you have this whole thing where they're talking to camera and selling it, and then at the end of that installment, it says, it does like the little cliffhanger text, and it goes, what's to become of Fulchester now that Tommy Brown has hung up his coat? Will Billy the Fish take over the United Helm? Will I'll Sail This Ship Alone, the fabulous new single by the Beautiful South, make it to the top of the Christmas pop charts? And then there's an asterisk that's been added for the book that says, historical note, like arse it did. But then a fantastic and unintentional punchline to that joke is the next one that they do it with. They do it with Dub Be Good To Me by Beats International. And then the cliffhanger text says, will the latest release from Go Discs prove as spectacularly unsuccessful as I'll Sail This Ship Alone by the Beautiful South? The great irony being that Dub Be Good To Me was a number one smash hit.
Yeah. This is what I mean. There are really good moments in there, and there are really good memories in there, but it's, I don't know. I just stay clear of the cartoon, stick to the yearbook, don't read it regularly, and don't do what I did, because I think the other thing that hurts itself is I read through this the first time all in one go. I sat down and I thought, I was really looking forward to it because I've not read it for so long, and I read it through in one go, and it becomes very, when you do that, it does become very repetitive.
Yeah.
And it leans into its own jokes time and time again, that when you do that, it's just like, oh, not again, really? Really? And you know, don't get me wrong, it's played for laughs. You shouldn't be taking it seriously, but it just falls a little flat. So a mixed review from me, and I think a slightly more positive one from you, Seb.
Slightly more positive, still mixed, because it is hard to shake some of the things about it that are either a bit of a problem or that don't work. But I think I do just have so much affection for it. And as I say, I think with the book, I think because I have read it more in the years since the cartoon, because I did remember watching the cartoon as a kid, but genuinely I'd never gone back to the cartoon. That was a bit of a shock that was so weak, that was a shame. But no, I think it's, you know, we had people say when we did our episode on, you know, best fictional footballers that weren't Roy the Rovers, and we very consciously didn't go near Billy the Fish either, because we felt it was worth an episode of his own. And there were people who said to us, oh, you should have done Billy the Fish. I mean, Billy the Fish himself is not one of the greatest fictional footballers.
No.
But I do think the comic stands up as, it's one of the most notable football-based comic strips out there, even if it is for completely different reasons from any other one. Yeah. It is one that people are likely to remember, because it did come along in that period when Viz was at its own peak of popularity in the early 90s. Well, one of them was running then, and you know, and it had its book and its cartoon then. But it's, yeah, I think it's, I mean, you said, you know, when he pops up now and again, it's a joy. I actually find it's not really, because I'm not sure there are any jokes left to do with Billy the Fish, and I think that's kind of the problem. And I don't think their satire on football itself has generally been as clever as their satire on football comics was. So I think he's had his day, and I don't think that actually, as I say, you know, I don't enjoy so much seeing him pop up now, because all it does is it makes me go, oh, that used to be really good in the 80s and now it's not as funny. And there are much funnier things in Viz than it.
Yeah. So this has been a little filler episode, but yet somehow we've managed to run past an hour, Seb. We always knew that.
I knew we somehow
happen.
Would, yeah.
Do you want to tell them where they can follow us on Twitter?
Yep, you can follow the show at BTTL Podcast. Slightly awkward name, but it was all we were available to get. I'm at Seb Patrick, Dave is at David Hartrick, and Dennis, who isn't here, is at Dennis with one N _ Hurley. You can also hear other episodes of the show, if this is your first time, at beyondthetouchline.co.uk. You can hear us on Acast and Spotify and Apple and any other place where you get your podcasts. And you'll find links to all the relevant feeds at that site, beyondthetouchline.co.uk.
Yes, like, subscribe, review, etc., as everybody always says at the end of these podcasts. Just to fill you in with the schedule, as I briefly went into earlier, we've got something a little bit special which Seb and Dennis may or may not be dreading coming up. And then we're back into one that is going to be quite a deep dive into something, I think, and back on a semi-regular schedule. So yeah, hope you stick with us for that. Thank you very much, Seb.
Thanks to you.
And thank you for listening. See you later.
Goodbye.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.